League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
I just want to know, like, who would play Jen McCabe in the movie?
Oh, who cares? That's what you want to know?
I was thinking about it today. I was like, who would play Jen McCabe in the movie? I can't believe there hasn't been a movie.
I mean, we're like right in the middle. It's a circus enough. We're making a movie now? God.
Hi, Julian Bezzavalli.
Hello, Patrick Hines.
All right, fam, we're doing that thing that we love to do. We are jumping into the regular feed on a not regular show day to give you an episode one of a series we're covering on Patreon. So this is A Body in the Snow, The Trial of Karen Reed. There's five episodes. All of them are available right now and ad-free on the Patreon.
Yeah, and when we started recording this, like months ago now, the second trial was underway, so the verdict wasn't out.
Yes.
So by, even like when we finished recording it, we didn't know the verdict, but don't worry, by the time you get to episodes four and five, we jump in and do a little intro and we let you know that we know. But this is us like going in kind of cold to the case a little bit.
Yeah. So we didn't know very much. It's a fascinating, I mean, I was obsessed with this series. I'm so glad that we covered it. It is twisty and turny. Karen Reed is the main talking head. She said they wanted to make this documentary because they wanted it to be like The Staircase.
Like, so she went to the filmmaker.
Yes. So if you like The Staircase, you're going to like this series. It's wild.
That's what she wanted.
All right. So enjoy it. And we'll say a quick goodbye on the way out.
Karen Reed is accused of hitting John O'Keefe with her SUV and leaving him to die in the snow.
Their relationship was not a happy one.
Not a single witness actually saw this happen.
There's a whole other side of the story.
This is funny, Ms. Reed.
They've got her guilty already.
So, did you drive your car into John?
Doing this film is my testimony. I want to say what happened exactly as it happened. John was a Boston police officer. We went to the bar with a bunch of cops. Jen McCabe invited us to the Alberts. Last I ever talked to him, when he got out of my car at Brian Albert's house.
Everybody liked Karen, and everything changed.
He was found dead on the lawn of another police officer.
This is one of their own, and that raises the stakes.
Miss Reed stated that she hit him three times. I hit him. I hit him.
I hit him. That statement doesn't appear on any of the tapes.
They were shot.
I am not on trial. I am a witness.
It's impossible to have any sympathy. They're all lying.
She'd smile or laugh.
She's posing for pictures.
Her behavior, in conjunction with the hard evidence, points in one direction.
DNA evidence placed parts of John on Karen's car.
Feels like I'm in a bad dream. This can't be real.
She was angry. She had been drinking.
I hate you.
How many calls?
There was over 50.
What did you text about going through Karen Reed's phone?
No news so far.
There were gasps.
One of the most uncomfortable moments of this entire trial.
Shame on you, sir.
Elle Magazine wants to feature me.
She was the happiest murder defendant in America.
You're either pro Karen Reed or you are pro police.
It's become a civil war.
This justice system will never be the same after this.
I can't believe what's happening to me.
We're here with Karen Reed in a
hotel
room.
Can I just say something?
Okay, please.
I got a couple big notes at the top of this thing.
Yep.
I've never seen a case so polarizing in my life. Never once.
Which is wild because we are never going to know what happened. We are never, ever, ever going to know.
People are very, very invested in the case.
Yeah.
This is coming from someone who's watching the second trial. Another reminder, we are talking about this documentary.
Yes.
We know the second trial is happening right now.
Yeah.
I'm not going to fight with you about this.
I'm not paying attention to it. So like, I don't know what's going on in the trial.
We will do our best to insert things if needed, but we are covering this documentary. We're not covering the trial of Karen Reed.
Yes.
We're covering A Body in the Snow,
yes,
which is a five-part documentary series.
100%.
I just want to be clear about that.
I think that's fair. I think that's good.
I want everyone's expectations to be realistic about what we're going to be doing and covering.
Yeah. Like when Karen Reed's expected to wear a suit and she doesn't want to look like Hillary Rodham Clinton.
I mean... She bought four suits that don't make her look like that, and now she's on to dresses.
Karen Reed has to be one of the least likable people we've ever covered.
Pretty bad.
Now,
does it make her a murderer?
No, 100% not.
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
Right,
you know?
Sure. I'm just saying, like, yeah. I think a lot of people have to separate their personal feelings about her.
Yeah, but the Karen Reed is a very, like, I use this word because it is the word that appropriately describes, if you look up the definition of this word, it applies.
Oh, God.
She is a very compelling person. She's very smart. She's very articulate. She certainly believes her own story. But I just wanted to also say, I am from this area of the world. Like, I am from Massachusetts, not the part of Massachusetts she's from.
Canton.
Like, I know these people. I grew up around these people. When I was watching this, I was texting
Trump drivers?
You. Unfortunately, probably.
Like, that we have to talk about at length, because no one else will.
That was my biggest thing about this trial from the beginning. But I recognize these people. They sound like everybody I grew up around. It is wild.
Yeah. Well, it opens with the director asking her.
Yeah.
So, did you drive your car into John?
I did not drive my car into John. Didn't reverse it. Did not hit John with my car.
Is there any chance this was an accident?
There is zero chance this was an accident. There was zero chance John was hit by a vehicle.
So did you drive your car into John?
I know.
Karen hates this question.
Well, wait a second. I really want to talk about this because she's very stiff. And at first I'm like, oh. And then she breaks.
The director's like, oh, all right with the attitude. Yeah. I get you're tired of it. Yes. I understand.
But then we get the real Karen. And this is where I was like, oh, shit. I could watch 5 episodes of this. Because she's saying,
you're tired of it. You've spent so much.
No, I'm not tired of it. I hate answering it because I feel like I'm being so scrutinized. Like, did she blink 3 times or twice? And did she, like, smirk or look to the right or down and up and left and whatever? And, like, it just feels so fake, even though it's true. I rather, like, explain everything else and, like, I did not hit John with my car. Like, I can't make it sincere enough. I hate saying it.
And look, like, I get it. Like, I understand that, like, she really, like her or hate her, I don't really like her. She's on trial for her life. She will say later, this documentary is her testimony. Like, everything she says, she's got to say it right. And I was glad to know that if we had at least 5 episodes, that we're going to get, like, a real person at points.
I'd rather explain everything else. Like, I did not hit John with my car.
Right.
Car.
Wait till we get to the drunk voicemails. Because, like, I know, I mean, I could do them verbatim.
And she says, and she's right. She goes, I cannot make it sincere enough. And then she just goes, I hate saying it.
And that is absolutely the truth. That is absolutely the truth.
Also, talk about a victim getting lost. The victim is John O'Keefe. We have yet to say his name.
I know. She has no idea if she killed him. She has no idea.
No.
And nobody does, and nobody will ever know.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So we start the Karen Reed story. She's 44 years old. She's never been married. No kids. She never wanted that life.
Yeah.
Totally get it. She worked in a financial services company for decades.
She goes, I don't imagine myself having that white picket fence bullshit.
Yeah, it is bullshit. Good for her.
But I just, like, the way that she said it, I was like, she's such a specific kind of person.
Yeah.
You know? And like, because we were talking about this off mic. Like, she lives alone in a huge house.
A huge house.
Huge, beautiful house. That life is not for me, but I get it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think also what she means is, I relate to Karen Reed zero, but I'm saying, like, I understand that, like, what you're supposed to do.
Uh-huh.
Like, that white picket life you're supposed to have.
Uh-huh.
If you want it and you get it, great. But if it's, like, shoved onto you,
totally.
Like, when are you guys going to have babies?
And
don't ask me that.
It almost feels like she's been her entire life getting questions like that.
I'm sure she has
you
been.
You know what
she's
I mean?
She's a 44-year-old single woman with no kids. I'm sure she's been asked endlessly.
Who's, like, financially successful.
Right.
You know what I mean?
She's
like,
doing
all
it
the
on
things.
Her own.
Yeah,
you know, whatever.
Totally.
You, lover or hater, you can't take, like, you have to acknowledge that she's definitely been asked very frustrating questions.
Yeah, 100%. She was once a lecturer at Bentley University. We'll find out how she got that job in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But she says, and I'm now being charged with murdering a Boston police officer. I could face life for murder in the second degree.
Yeah. So she's born and raised in Massachusetts, older brother, younger sister. Karen is the middle child, which we just discussed on the regular feed. Whether you agree with what Google told me about middle children
and,
or not.
Oh, right. Didn't we go through this? I'm a good match for most of it.
She goes, definitely the most outgoing.
Yeah.
I'm like, uh-huh. Fun way to say it.
I'm the middle child.
And she says, I've always been very reactionary and maybe a little impetuous.
I said to my sister the other day, I'm like, I'm doing exactly what I should be doing with my podcast. And she's like, and touring the country with an evening with you. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
That's what I was born to do.
Yep. John O'Keefe is our victim. He died January 29th, 2022.
We meet her parents really quickly. Janet's her mom.
She was always brought a lot of fun to, yeah, she's got a great personality. She really does.
This is my darling daughter.
I was dean of business at Bentley University. I did that up until the time this event transpired.
My father loved his job so much, and there's an old phrase, you love your job, you never work a day in your life, and that's my dad. And I mean, my dad's gonna be 76, I've just turned 44, and I need my dad more than ever.
He's the dean of business at Bentley University.
There it is.
Please see earlier statement about how she got that job.
There it is. Brendan is John's BFF. They met when they were four years old. They went to school together. He's like, he's been my best friend for 40 years.
I'm always jealous of people like this. Like elementary school, middle school, high school, stayed close in college. He visited me wherever I lived as I moved across the country for my job.
Yeah.
He's known John for 40 years.
So John came from a family of five, his parents and his two siblings, Paul and Kristen. He is described as being relentlessly generous.
Yeah.
Very
and
funny.
We will see that in spades in 2 seconds.
Yeah. So Tara Kerrigan is a friend of John's. She's also an ex.
Related to Nancy? We don't know. It's possible. They live like two towns away from each other.
Oh, maybe.
Nancy's from Stoneham.
Wow. That means nothing to me. I'm not great at geography to begin with.
Me either. But like, I just was like, wait, Kerrigan from Massachusetts, are they related? They look kind of alike.
I'm sure that's a question she gets asked often.
As often as Karen gets when you haven't kids.
That's her version of that. But Tara explains.
Johnny and I started dating when I was around 25 years old. We had a big love that evolved into a friendship that lasted a really long time. He was just a really sweet, dependable, reliable, honest guy. Very loyal, selfless.
I think there is no kinder adjective than dependable. Like, what a nice thing to say about somebody.
Sure,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Selfless. Joe, we meet another John, a friend from college. He's the one who tells us that John was always going to be a cop, that John's grandfather was a cop.
John actually went to school for criminal justice, and it's amazing that that's not a requirement to be a cop.
Oh, I know.
You can just fucking walk in and be like, I want a gun.
I know.
There's an episode of The Simpsons, oh my God, Mike always laughs, where I can't remember, he's gonna roll his eyes at why I can't remember how we got here, but they're like recruiting people to be a cop, and he's like, forget that, when do we get the freaking guns? And it's like, most people, who, in my experience, are just like, when do I get to play fucking cops
well,
and robbers?
John's grandfather's badge number was 490. So when John became a cop, he requested it, but they'd retired the number. So we added a 2. So now his badge number was 2490. And all of his friends wear the number. But I was like, if I ever became a cop, my badge number would have to be 24601.
I mean, get in line.
Or like 525,600, I guess.
Again, get in line. 867-5309. Any like famous pop culture number?
No, it's got to be something from the theater.
From the theater. I mean, within 5 years, we'll have a jukebox musical.
Totally.
Where that song is in it, if we don't have one already. So 9 years before John O'Keefe died, his sister, Kristen, who they also call Christy, tragically died.
She found out she had a brain tumor, and they said that she fought really hard, but she died within 5 months.
And then 2 months after that, her husband died of a heart attack.
Like, this, we were talking about this in the
Deadly American Marriage.
Thank you.
It's not that hard.
But it's because there's American Murder, like that whole series
on
Netflix.
I think they're all doing it on purpose so that we're like, is this the one I'm supposed to watch? And then they get like a stray download because someone thinks they're watching something else.
Well, and whenever I get asked in an interview, like, what are the good ones to watch? I'm always like American Murder because it was the Lacey Peterson and Gabby Petito.
Right.
But I was just saying, like, these kids that experience tragedy after tragedy, because John's sister and the husband, who died within 2 months of each other, had two very young kids.
John entered a very difficult situation. He has this niece and nephew that just lost both of their parents.
And he said, I'm taking the kids. He said, I think my sister would like it. I think she'd be proud of me. I'm super close to the kids anyway, and I want to do this.
There was never a question for Johnny. It was never like, oh, should I or could I? I have all this other stuff I have to. It was just did it. He assumed that role rather seamlessly. They needed somebody to be there, and he was there. Always there.
John becomes a single parent of two kids overnight, and by choice.
Again, everyone says it was never a question. Right. So they're 8 and 12 at the time.
Those kids are going to lose John 9 years later. Mm-hmm. And that's just so awful.
They're going to have three tragic deaths in their life. Then they're going to be on the witness stand in two trials about it. It's crazy.
It's like we were talking in the other episode about how like we haven't experienced any tragedy like that. Yet there are some kids out there that have experienced five.
I know. It's really heartbreaking.
It's so awful.
That's why we just like have to like do our best out there to be like kind to people all the time.
And be grateful.
And just be, you know, it's like.
It's like how they say it takes nothing to smile, but it takes like 87 muscles to frown.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. Here I am telling everyone to smile.
It's on a needlepoint pillow.
Totally. It's probably hanging in our bathroom.
It's like a long way of telling women. It's like extra words to tell me to smile.
Why don't you make this needlepoint about how hard it is to not smile?
Are you going to mansplain how to needlepoint to me too?
But my point is just like, it's much easier to be kind than it is to be mean.
Absolutely. You know? A lot of fucking work to be an evil monster.
Yes. You don't feel good about it.
Some people, I think, feel pretty great about their choices.
I could give you a couple names.
So John and Karen's relationship, they first met way back in 2004 through friends of friends.
Yes.
They dated for a few weeks. Karen says she went to Ireland for work just temporarily, but because of that, she stopped seeing him and lost touch.
Which I'm assuming she was in Ireland the exact same week as Molly from that other documentary.
I know.
They're
besties.
I know.
Getting Cosmos.
My friend Molly.
Oh my God. But it's interesting because she's like, I was there for work just temporarily, but I stopped seeing him anyway. Like she knew she was coming. Whatever. Just
they were young. And yeah.
But they reconnect at the beginning of lockdown because we learned that John, like I think many people were doing.
This would never have occurred to me, but get it, John.
At the beginning of the pandemic, I had been home working remote for about 2 weeks and was going stir crazy. And I hadn't been on Facebook in years.
From what I understand, he put out a Facebook message to several ex-girlfriends and she was the one to reply.
I didn't answer right away because it was like a picture of him with a bunch of kids. And I thought, oh, he looks like he's married and he's got kids. And then I ended up reaching back out to him and then I learned the backstory of where these kids came from.
All single people, just after 2 weeks of lockdown, just started messaging all of their exes. I know. Should we bubble together?
So, like, staying sane out there or whatever the, like, go-to thing was?
Staying sane out there.
Hey, how's quarantine? Remember we called it quarantine?
You know what I remember from the early days of quarantine are the people, and I saw this a lot. I'm going to remember the days that we didn't have a bedtime, that we got to spend time with the children. My
other
kids
kiddos.
Weren't wondering. Their kid, as the mama bear.
The mommy speak, mother speak.
Like, that shit made me insane.
Do you remember the time without bedtime? Daisy always have a bedtime.
Daisy, I'm the only thing I'm strict about is bedtime.
Really?
Oh, very strict about
it. Not even like, let's have a snow day and stay up late.
Sometimes. But like most, if it's a weeknight, if it's a school night, her bed is 8:30. Like,
well, because yours is.
No.
So you don't want her staying up late.
Well, and we are getting to an age now where we have to start thinking about that. But like, I take sleep for
the
kids
very seriously.
She's gonna
be 16, like, Dad, it's 7:30.
I know.
Staying up.
I know. But like, sleep to me is the most important thing.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
We learned Karen was, quote, the only one who wrote back. And she says this interesting thing where she's like,
I know.
All of his Facebook photos made it look like he was married and had kids. So at first I didn't respond.
Which makes sense. And good choice, Karen.
Beat. But eventually I responded.
I mean, quarantine got to everybody eventually.
And then she learned about his sister and his niece and nephew and like that. But she's saying is, well, I wasn't going to touch that with a 10-foot pole because here's this married ex of mine.
But then I did. I mean, quarantine was a different time.
You know what I mean?
I'm not making an excuse for her, but I will say that the kids were not a turnoff for her. She didn't want kids of her own, but she loved John's kids.
Yeah, until they were a turnoff, I guess, because we get into it later.
Yeah.
That she's like, I didn't even want kids, and now I'm fighting over kids in my relationship. Like, what kind of relationship is this?
Yeah.
It was a very toxic relationship, we'll say that.
There's not enough from her of like, oh my God, it's horrible that he's gone. Oh my God, he died
you
in
don't
such
get
a tragic
way. You don't get a smidge of that.
My guess is that like, she's told she can't say that, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, or but, maybe like psychologically, maybe she's told by her lawyers she shouldn't so she could stay focused on her fight. I don't know.
I think there's a little bit of like, if she gives an inch, then they're going to take a mile or whatever. And I don't mean this in a denigrating way. She's not a warm and fuzzy person.
Oh,
it's
no.
It's kind of one of the things I find charming about
her. I was going to say, I think she would say that. I don't think anyone's like, wait a second.
But if none of this had ever happened and I was a regular at the waterfall or whatever, I would never be mad when Karen showed up. You know what I mean? Like, she's the kind of person you drink with. Like, Karen to me is the kind of person you drink with.
These are all people you drink with, number one. Two, there's a lot of sidebars in season two,
uh-huh.
The second trial, but they're all, you know, from Massachusetts, so they call sidebars. Right. So we're going to have another sidebar. And there's a lot of sidebars, and sometimes they take a long time. So now sometimes the internet is calling it like, oh, we're heading to a sidebar and grill for, you know, a little nightcap going to the sidebar. And Mike was like, some like law school town has to have a bar called sidebar.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
You must.
Yeah.
Sidebar and grill. So I told you we'd talk a little bit about the second trial.
I'm into it.
So they get together. They date for like 2 years, of course, up until his death.
And Brendan is saying everybody likes Karen. And then he sort of changes his tune. He's like, well, nobody was like, he shouldn't be with her.
Sure.
You know?
So here's the thing. This documentary was Karen's idea. She and her legal team wanted this to happen. And I looked up some stuff about how that came to be.
Oh, really?
And The Staircase was their inspiration.
Oh, it makes sense.
Yeah. The director
filmed like The Staircase.
The director says that Karen and her team mentioned that case and that documentary specifically.
Oh, interesting.
And according to the director, Terry, Karen said to her, so this is like a quote from Terry quoting Karen, that Karen was like, look, I don't want to be the Michael Peterson, but I'm the Michael Peterson of this thing. Like, I don't want to be
true.
A staircase case, but I am
but
a staircase
I am.
Case.
Yeah, that's true.
So like you were saying, Karen sees it as her way of testifying.
Yeah, yes, yes, yes. And it's crazy because like as we're going the ad break, we get the first sort of like, we hear some of the crazy voicemails. Because at this point, Karen sounded a little too sane.
Well, she says though, just before we get to that, she says, this is her way of testifying. She's not going to go on the stand.
Yeah.
She says to us right now, she will contradict this in a second. I'm going to contradict it right now.
This is my version of testifying. Doing this film is my testimony. This has happened to me. I know what happened between John and me. I know what happened in our life and time spent together before then. I know the events of that morning. I know what I said. I know what I didn't say. And I haven't been able to say it. It's incredibly frustrating. I want to say what happened exactly as it happened.
She claims she knows everything that happened. She's
100%,
she's 100% clear on absolutely everything. We will learn that that's not true. It's also impossible.
Yes.
Because everyone was hammered.
So hammered.
She's 100% clear on absolutely everything.
Maybe what she means by that is like the story that she's decided is what happened is what she's clear on. Because there's absolutely no way.
But she's
like,
not even clear on it.
I know. It doesn't
It's a weird thing to say.
It is a very weird thing. And a weird thing to include in the documentary.
Well, it's a perfect thing to include in the documentary. If you're making a documentary trying to show all sides, you gotta use that.
Yeah.
I wonder what the lawyers, what their stipulations were. I mean, clearly they didn't get final cut, but I wonder why someone wasn't like, Karen, don't say that. Can we take that again?
And she's also like a loose cannon. I know.
Jane.
Well, and it's almost like it would have been safer for her to just testify because we got, 100 hours of her interviews?
Can you imagine her on the stand?
I know. Oh my God.
So Karen tells us her side of what happened on January 28th, 2022. Karen and John get in a big fight that morning. We see the texts. They're all online. I've read all of them.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. So they're fighting all day. It starts at 10 o'clock in the morning, this text chain. Karen says, you really hurt me this time. And John says, I think this is a very important text. John says, I'm sorry. This has been an issue with me for 8 years. It physically hurts me to see everyone else in their, the kids, his niece and nephew, their life, do things for them. And I'm forced to always be the bad guy.
And I will tell you, that's a real thing that like, especially these kids who have been traumatized, they've lost their parents. Probably their aunts and uncles want to give them everything they want.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
I mean, they're 10 and 14.
Yeah, like putting in boundaries and, you know.
Right, giving some structure. And then I'm sure he was like fun Uncle John.
Right.
And now he has to sort of overcorrect that.
Yeah.
And like, usually I'm just guessing, but I can understand why maybe it would be like, well, John always lets us eat pizza and stay up late.
Right,
and now he can't do that.
Yes.
And so now the 10-year-old is like, well, you used to let me do that and now you don't.
And also it's a shitty double standard for John to have for Karen because Karen's just like the girlfriend. And of course she's going to A, do the thing that's easy for her and B, the thing that like makes the kids like her. Like whatever they're fighting about. Like, I'm on Karen's side on this.
So Karen is so angry that she leaves his house and goes to her gigantic house in Mansfield to work remote all day. So the full text exchange is kind of wild. Like, their relationship was pretty toxic and manipulative. And throughout this whole day, she's calling him over and over and over and over again.
To have, like, fights?
To fight. And he'd text back, like, stop calling me. I'm not answering. I'm with the kids.
Yeah.
So they were fighting. Like, she really, really wanted to keep the fight going. Like, it's all she wanted. You could read the text. But, like, sometimes there'd be a lull. And then 10 minutes later, she'd be like, so anyway, you really hurt me. And he's like, I said I was sorry. What do you want?
Yeah.
And then she'd be like, so are you going out tonight? And it's just, it's all very high school. These are just scratching the surface of the absolutely immature high school texts. We will get to all of it later. These people have no game, by the way.
Karen is saying that, like, she's saying to us,
that day, everyone was getting ready for this massive blizzard, but I realized I didn't want to be shut in here with the snow. I'd rather be up there with John and the kids and doing something fun. And we always had fun on the weekends.
She's making it sound like she hasn't talked to John all day.
They were texting all day long.
That's hilarious.
Because, like, for the last week, like you're saying, it's one of those storms where, like, they're talking about it for a week on the news.
Yes.
There's no toilet paper at the store anymore. Uh-huh. It's like one of those, like, hunker down.
Yeah, right?
She likes chaos and she likes drama. Like, in relationships, she just does. And this is a relationship that, based on what I've read, it wasn't great. And there was a lot of like, well, fine. And then she did that and the storm was coming and she's like, shit, I don't want to be here.
Yeah,
like, whatever.
Yeah.
So Karen's dad tells her to stay home.
Yeah, he calls at 6 o'clock, right? And she looks into the camera and she's like, Dad, if I just listened to you, none of this would have happened.
Right. So here's like, it's just, the texts are interesting because, and we'll get into more of it. It's like, she'll try to like bait him into a fight and then she'll be like, so what are you doing later? Like, who are you going to meet? Where are you going? And it's very like high school toxicity where it's like she doesn't want him going out without her because if they're fighting, maybe he'll cheat on her.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, like she just sort of doesn't want him to be out socializing without her.
Uh-huh. She doesn't feel confident in the relationship.
No.
Yeah.
And he is feeling like not thrilled about, like, they've been fighting about the kids a lot. Like, they're, neither of them are happy.
When you're getting nothing good out of the relationship, it's time for the relationship to end.
And neither of them were, and I think Karen didn't want to admit. It's a sad thing to admit, or whatever.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Sure.
Like, no one's really saying what's going on. And from
the text, lockdown is happening, and the world is on fire.
And then it's like, well, let's just get through the snowstorm, and then we'll break up.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Like, let's just get through the weekend together, and then we'll talk about it. Because John is starting to, even in these texts, like, I'm so sick of this.
Yes.
So here's Karen's timeline.
I think I left here in Mansfield at 8:30 and I met John at a bar in Canton, C.F. McCarthy's at 9. And then we went to the waterfall right next door to McCarthy's. At the waterfall, it was Jenna Matt McCabe. We saw Jen McCabe all the time. She coached John's niece's basketball team, so we saw her 2 or 3 times a week. And then Brian and Nicole Albert and Brian Higgins were there.
They're not drinking casually. You know what I mean?
At one point in her text, at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Karen's like, I'm going to go get a drink soon. And John's like, I don't know why you're announcing you're going to get a drink. Like, good for you. Go have fun.
Good for you.
Go have fun. So I don't know if Karen was drinking at 3 in the afternoon or not. Look,
well,
it's snowstorm. There are no rules. Doesn't matter.
And it seems like they were. So at Waterfall is where they run into Jen and Matt McCabe. She tells us, this is where we meet Jen McCabe. Also at the bar was Brian and Nicole Albert and a guy named Brian Higgins.
Now, Karen says that she just met Brian and Nicole Albert a week before.
Yes.
We'll get into Brian Higgins.
Yeah. So it's getting late. Karen says that Jen invited them over to the Albert's house. Like the bars are closing and everyone's going back to the Albert's.
It's 11:45.
Yeah.
They've been out since 8:50 or whatever.
And drinking since who knows when.
And Karen gets to the bar at 8:51. I don't know how long John's been there.
Right. And Karen says this thing. She goes,
my attitude always when I was out and about with John was, you know, he's got to blow off steam. It suits us all if John blows off a little steam, because he always has steam. So I said, sure, let's go. This can't last forever, right? Everybody was some level of intoxication. That was what we did in Canton. Everybody drank. They leave these bars. They're in their little enclaves where they can all go drunk driving on the way home and nobody gets pulled over.
Because no one has ever said to us, like, John's kind of a violent guy, John's kind of an angry guy, John's got to blow off steam.
And she's not saying that either.
Uh-huh. Maybe she just means, like, he's an outgoing guy and he needs to, like, be around people.
I think John had a lot on his shoulders. I think the kids are a lot, and I think that's what she means. Again, she's not the best communicator.
Right.
And I think what she meant to say is, like, because John's always got a lot going on, and if he could just go out and have fun for a little bit, blow off steam, then. But my question is, like, you can blow off steam. Where are the kids?
I was just going to say,
14,
like, 14 is, like, midnight is late for the 14-year-old to be, like, look, the 14-year-old, in my opinion, could babysit the kid until 8:30.
And the kid's 10. It's not like it's a toddler.
Right. But, like, midnight is scary o'clock for a 14-year-old.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
So Karen doesn't want to go to the Albert's house, she says, but she goes anyway. And you really do, I don't know, let me know if you've ever had this feeling, but when you're like, I know that eventually I'll be out of here. Like, this can't actually, this isn't my eternity.
Yeah,
I know that.
I just don't go when I feel like that. Although right. I almost never feel like that.
But if it's an obligation or if it's like, or if you're like watching a play and you're like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen.
Uh-huh.
And you're like,
uh-huh.
it's going to be intermission soon and then I can leave.
Totally.
But like that yeah. moment where you're kind of like, I know intellectually.
Yes.
Eventually, I'll see my dog again. Eventually, yeah, yeah, I'll yeah. be out in the fresh air and I won't be in this horrible situation.
It's a shitty way to feel at midnight when you're already 18 drinks in.
I just thought that was funny. Like, I didn't yeah. even mean to dissect it that much.
No,
I was
no,
just
no.
like, I know that feel. Like, this can't
totally.
Last forever. I'll go to the stupid Albert's house. What are their names? Albert's.
Especially
fine.
If it's going
to
make, like, I've been yelling at my boyfriend all day. It's going to make him happy.
Whatever.
Whatever.
Now, they gloss over this, but I want to slow down on it.
Let's do 15 minutes on it.
Because they act like it's not a big deal.
Right.
Everyone is hammered. When she says they, she's talking about cops.
Yes.
And friends and family.
Yes.
I've said many times on the record, I fucking hate drunk driving or driving under the
it's
influence.
It's the most awful thing you can do.
It's so selfish and reckless yes. and dangerous and stupid.
Yes.
And all of these cops are doing it. Everyone, the wife of cops, the girlfriends of cops, the friends of cops, the cops themselves, the cops, the cops, the cops. So they're driving drunk on a regular basis.
The restaurant we're going to learn later is giving them all to-go cups.
John O'Keefe is a cop. Brian Albert is a cop. The house
yes.
they're going to. Brian Higgins works for the ATF. They are all law enforcement.
Not to mention they're all parents, you know.
And this is the start of the whole blue wall shit that
yes.
makes me crazy.
Yes.
There's even a photo of John wearing one of those like Blue Lives Matter hats.
Oh.
So these are the kind of cops we're dealing
uh-huh.
with.
Uh-huh.
They're above the law.
Uh-huh.
So
uh-huh.
Karen is hammered and driving to the Albert's house because Jen McCabe invited them there.
Yes.
John, for whatever reason, is on, instead of just like dropping a pin or giving them, this. We're all in like a tiny cul-de-sac, right?
Right.
John is on the phone with Jen, who's giving directions to the Albert's house.
Left at the Dunkin'.
Like, and then, truly,
yeah.
they are drunk. He's
yeah.
on the phone.
It's,
there is a blizzard.
Yes, yes.
Not good.
Now, they're going to, the address is 34 Fairview.
God.
They must.
There was a time where I didn't know the words 34
I know.
Fairview.
There is so much footage of the outside of this house. Drone footage. Footage from the street, from the sidewalk. Like, they must just be allowed legally to film the house.
Of course they are.
I guess. Is that
well, the Alberts
law?
Don't live there anymore. They sold that shit.
Oh, my
so,
God.
I don't know.
So they get there and Karen says.
And we arrive at 34 Fairview. It didn't look like there was any soiree going on. It didn't look inviting. The outside was dark and I didn't see any familiar looking vehicles. And I said, John, can you make sure we're welcome? And he said, I'll run in.
She says to John, can you make sure that we're even welcome here? And John says, I'll run in.
Here's the quote. John takes Karen's full vodka soda, which was sitting in the cup holder.
She goes, John got out of the car. He took my full vodka soda, which was sitting in the cup holder. She's sitting with a cop who's also hammered, sipping on a vodka soda on the way to like another cop's house. It is unconscionable
and
to me.
And no one's talking about
and
it.
And no one's talking about it.
And Karen, 2 seconds ago, was like, I remember everything. I'm super clear.
Right.
That's
yeah, yeah,
just
yeah, yeah,
impossible.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing is, I'm not like a prude. I'm not whatever. But like, alcohol affects the way you think and your
of
memory,
course.
Everybody.
I mean, like, listen to the voicemail. She's screaming at him in 2 minutes.
And also, eyewitness accounts are not very reliable. So even if you're as sober as a duck.
Yeah.
I don't know where that came from. It's the first thing that came in my mind.
It was so crowded. You couldn't even fit a cheeseburger in there.
If you're as sober as a cheeseburger, you couldn't. I told
merch.
The Discord this story, actually, because people were saying that, like, cheeseburgers is a unit of measurement or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just
yeah.
how funny it is. A friend of mine once said, I was about to walk into a party that was, like, all dudes. And his warning was, like, you're going to be, like, they threw like a hot cheeseburger in a pool full of piranhas. And the Discord was like, what? Like, hey? And I was like, my point is people have been using cheeseburgers to describe things for quite some time.
Oh my God.
It was a cute cheeseburger.
Cute
like,
cheeseburger.
I guess I'll take it.
In a pool full of piranhas?
But
absolutely.
And I was like, oh,
yeah.
That's also, I'm going to turn around.
Right, yeah, yeah. But also, where's the nearest In-N-Out?
But also, where's the nearest In-N-Out?
Yeah.
So, everyone, the drinking is out of control. Also, grow the fuck up. You guys are all like in your 40s.
There's like
50s.
Booze in it. If you want to, whatever.
You're
it makes
cops.
You crazy. John gets out of the car, takes the soda, walks up to the breezeway, which she takes 10 minutes to explain is like the side door. It's not the front door.
This is actually important though, because it comes down to did John walk into the house?
Right.
So Karen is saying she
yeah.
saw John walk into the house
right.
with her full vodka soda.
Yeah.
2 or 3 minutes go by. And John hasn't returned. She was expecting him to sort of almost wave to her.
Yes.
Like, because she's like, let me know if there's a party in there. It doesn't look like there's a party at all.
If this is what happened, you know what I mean? Like we've come to accept that she sent him in to see if they were welcome. Or did they have a big fight and he stormed out of the car?
Well, and
you know?
I doubt that she, look, Karen is self-described impulsive.
Yes.
I don't know how long she waited before she got pissed. Because
uh-huh.
she's immediately pissed.
I waited probably a minute. and he doesn't come. And it only took like 2 or 3 minutes that for me to be irritated. So I called him and he didn't answer. I said, you've got to be kidding me. What are you doing? You just went in and I'm sitting here. Either we're welcome or we're not, but it shouldn't take you 5 minutes to determine that. And then about 10 minutes went by and I left.
She's sitting there. She's enraged that he hasn't come back immediately. According to Karen, she waits a full 10 minutes and then leaves.
Yeah.
Which is a choice. And I know we're not allowed to say, if I wouldn't do this, then no one would do this. I get it. But to me, if this is what happened, it kind of says a lot about their relationship. I can't imagine. And again, just because I wouldn't do it doesn't mean shit. I get it. Just go in.
Right.
Or ask a question.
No, I think that she has no idea what the conversation was that they had in the car. That he got out for some reason. She can't remember if he's coming back or not.
And it feels like if you're leaving him, you're just making a little chaos. Just for fun. Just also, a little cherry on the top of the night. Let's pick a fight.
He's got no way to get home. You know what I mean? You're his ride. None of this adds up to me. I don't think she has any idea.
I'm just not exactly sure why she would leave and then be mad at him because she left.
Exactly.
Because what happened, and I'm happy to be wrong, it's just my perspective that I would be choice number one would be call someone else in the house.
Right.
Knock on the door.
Uh-huh.
That was just, she was so mad she left. That was her prerogative.
I also get the sense that she doesn't feel like these people like her very much. I feel like she feels like she isn't welcome there.
And I don't think she was.
Yeah.
I think if that was her gut, she was. I don't think that they liked her. She clearly didn't like them. She was dreading going to this house of people she just met the night before. John, it's midnight. Can we just go home?
Exactly.
I get it.
Yes.
I get it.
Yeah.
Jen McCabe doesn't seem like the warmest, fuzziest girl in the bunch either, if I may.
Can I do the voicemails now?
Yes.
Because she leaves and the voicemails she leaves for him were
John, you are using me right now. You're a loser. Yourself.
You don't even want to be there. Now you're hammered and sitting in the car, but you left.
You're a fucking loser. Fuck yourself.
Fuck yourself.
Fuck yourself. It's so Boston.
She left 8 voicemails.
Oh my God.
Some of them are her screaming at him, accusing him of sleeping somebody else. You're all fucking someone, blah, blah, blah. But it's you know where he is and you left him.
Yeah.
Some of them are just audio of her clomping around the house with her shoes on.
Oh my God.
Did she wake up the niece and nephew? She's hammered.
She's hammered.
Some of the messages are literally just her clomping around the house.
She probably just, this is what I'm saying. I could talk about it forever and we will, but we will just never know. We will just never, ever, ever know.
At 12:37, she calls, John, I fucking hate you. 12:42, you just hear the beeping of the garage door and the shoes on the ground. Then there's another one at 1 o'clock. No, just room tone.
Oh my God.
Nothing. She called a million times.
Hey, do you know where I put my, any idea? Do where my slippers are.
It's then she's like, John, I'm going home. I cannot babysit your niece. I need to go home. You're fucking using me. You're with another girl. You're a fucking loser. Fuck yourself. She is so drunk that she is now accusing him of ditching her and sleeping with someone else and assuming he's going to watch her kids. When it sounds also what Karen has also said is that she was invited to a party she didn't want to go to. Was she welcome there? Probably not.
Yeah.
Whatever, she didn't want to go. But she also just told us that she left him.
Right.
Because she was mad at him.
Yes.
It's so obvious on the voicemail that she's hammered.
Right.
And thinks that he left her.
Oh, is that what she thinks?
She says, I'm going home. I cannot babysit your niece. You're using me right now. You're fucking another girl. I'm taking that to mean that she thinks that John is assuming she's going to watch his niece and nephew, the kids for him, while he's out gallivanting.
Oh, my God.
But she just told us. They were both invited to a party. Whether it's a good party, I'm sure it's a terrible party.
Yeah.
You don't want to go. I totally understand. But you left him.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. She's not remembering things minute to minute.
No.
So this is where we learn John is found dead in the snow the next morning at 6 a.m. And obviously we're going to get much more into that later. But it's on local news.
It's all over the news. He's a cop.
Yeah.
He's a Boston
and
cop.
This is how best friend Brendan finds out from another friend that John is dead.
So right away, the story is that Karen hit him with her car and left him there.
To me, that is suspicious.
Right.
That is somebody made up that story.
Well, we get Jennifer, who's a retired FBI agent. She's not working on the case. She's just here as an expert in law enforcement, I guess.
Yeah.
She says everything is presenting as a motor vehicle accident. So 3 days later, Karen is arrested and charged with vehicular manslaughter. They'd already taken her car and her cell phone and nobody else's.
Yes.
So she's like, I know I'm a suspect.
I want to point out, when they say that it's all looking like a normal vehicular homicide, they show us an autopsy photo of his arm.
Yeah.
And he looks like he was attacked by a werewolf.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It doesn't look like he was rammed by a car and then left in the snow.
Here's a story. I've been hit by a car.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to tell you the story. I'm fine. I was completely fine. It's going to sound jarring to hear.
Yeah.
I was leaving a restaurant a million years ago with my friend, Mary Kate Burke. Hi. My dear friend, we went to high school together. It's winter. I'm crossing the street, and there used to be, we don't use the term for it anymore, but you know those cabs that were like black cars? They weren't sanctioned by the city.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
free
yeah.
Lyft.
Yes.
Basically, they'd like try to go around and scam you and be like, pay me $50 to
and
go
I'll
here.
Take you 10 blocks.
But it
yeah.
wasn't a real cab.
Yes.
So he was coming around the corner, and I was crossing the street and 100 miles an hour, and he hit me.
Oh, my God.
I flew in the air, landed on top of the hood of his car. He jammed on the brakes, and I went flying off the car. Now, my friend, Mary Kate, who witnessed this, I don't think has still gone back to that restaurant because
oh
seeing it happen
yeah.
was so traumatizing
yeah,
for
yeah,
her.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
The guy gets out of the car. I get up, and I'm like stars in my eyes. I'm like, what? The guy screams at me, drives away. There were some finance bros who saw the whole thing, tried to chase the car down. They tried to be my, like, knight in shining armor,
yeah.
right? But they were like, oh, my God, I can't believe you got up. Like, are you okay? The restaurant manager comes running out. Do we need to call the ambulance? And I'm like, no, I kind of feel like the worst funny bone I've ever had in my
yeah.
elbow. Like, Mary-Kate is hysterical. Like, I mean, I'm consoling her now.
Yeah, yeah.
The EMTs get here. They go right to her. They think she got
hit. Oh, God.
I was fine. I was like stunned, but fine. So what happened, I was like making jokes with the EMTs. I was like, can you write that like I'm dancing and my friend's crying? Like,
uh-huh.
can you just write that I'm like being cool about whatever? I was being obnoxious. But it's odd. It's a weird, very weird thing. But what he told me was, he goes, the reason you're fine is because what are you wearing? I was wearing a sweater, a hoodie,
yeah.
a winter coat, and a scarf. And he goes, because of those layers, because I felt the cold of the ground first of all, I will never forget what it sounded like and felt like to be on the hood of someone's car. Like, it's wild. But he goes, the reason you're okay is because you were so bundled up.
Yeah.
Like, otherwise, because I felt the cold from the cement, from the concrete, through my jacket. But I had a couple bruises, but that's it. I didn't have any scratches.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything. But I also was like fine.
Uh-huh.
Getting hit by a car.
Oh,
so
wait.
Much so that like I physically was in the air.
Yes.
Like I was fine.
So what you're saying is this amount of it's not even bruising. This amount of like ripped, torn skin doesn't make any sense.
It feels like you'd have to have your bare arm.
And have to have been like dragged by the car.
Dragged by the car.
Yeah.
Those injuries, based on, again, my personal experience,
yeah.
doesn't make sense.
Now, they're like a layperson's eyes. It doesn't match like being just like bumped by a car, which is what they're saying Karen would have done.
And then he was so drunk, he passed out and left him to die there.
Right.
Like that, those injuries.
It looks like his arm
no
got ripped up by something.
Because how would it hit his arm? Well, I mean, we'll get into all this.
Yeah, yeah,
but,
yeah.
But yeah. So David Yannetti is Karen's lawyer. And he's like, look.
When I heard that an officer was killed, I knew that there's a heightened sense of importance that is given to those cases. Even if prosecutors thought that they had a case that they couldn't prove, they were not going to let this one go. It became clear that this was going to require a lot of work. So somebody else would have to be brought in.
Now, my first thing, the minute I have to tell you, going into this documentary, I didn't watch the first trial. I didn't know about this case. I wasn't following it at
Me
all.
Me either.
So I
remember hearing about it. Everyone was talking about it. I was like, I don't know anything about
like
this.
The first time I heard Jen McCabe's name was in this episode.
Yes.
Like I truly knew
Same.
Nothing.
Yeah.
My first question is, why didn't anyone descend on that house? This is a cop. He's dead in the presence of other law enforcement. Why didn't they immediately search the house, take the phones of the people in the house? Question, like, there's a dead body on the front lawn.
Oh, but it feels like hierarchy. Like, all, like, one of them's like, we're going to learn, like, a DEA agent. Like, it feels like or they're going to protect everybody. Like, if one of the cops did kill him, like, I feel like if they're higher ranking than John, are they protected?
Well, the question is, like, if this is a cop and
yeah.
everyone's so devastated and the whole town is out for blood for Karen Reed, then you do what you need to do to to get to the bottom of what happened to one of your own, right?
Yeah, like, but this is where we learn about the, and I don't know if it's real or not, but the corruption of the Boston Police Department is apparently legendary.
It's very real. They are arguably the most corrupt police force in the country.
Yeah.
Arguably. Very well documented. But that's the thing where I was like, I'm sorry, nobody asked a question about from the people who live in the house. There's a dead body on your front lawn.
I'm not surprised. Like, this doesn't surprise me. Just by the...
My point is that it's corrupt.
Right.
My point is that any other normal fucking person, it's like we just did this with Fox Hollow.
Yeah.
You're telling me that one little bone fragment on my lawn, I'd be hauled in, but this guy's allowed to run off to Canada?
Yeah, but that's the other thing, and that's what's so crazy making about this case, is that I'll also never believe that five people conspired to kill this guy and then throw him on the lawn, and no one's ever going to talk about it.
I think they think that it's like 40 people conspired.
I mean, that's just so insane to me.
It's all insane.
You know, like, I don't know. I don't know.
So her lawyer knows this is going to be... Yannetti's like, I can't do this by myself, girl.
Yeah.
This is going to be huge. So he wants to put a team together. So Karen actually has the great idea of calling Harvard's Criminal Justice Institute.
Which I was like, can you just call like 411 and get the number for Harvard's Criminal Justice Institute?
Yeah, she's like, I need a lawyer. Let me just call Harvard Law and see if Elle Woods is available.
I would truly, and I guess like because she has a high paying job and no dependents, like she just has all the money in the world for this?
I guess so.
So like the people that she gets on the phone there tell her that they should call Kevin Spacey's guy.
Yeah, they were like, look at the Kevin Spacey case. It's very similar.
Geniuses.
And I'm like, what?
No, it doesn't make any sense.
So call Alan Jackson and Liza. A little.
I got an email, and the subject line of the email was something along the lines of a murder of a Boston cop. And I took one look at one of the autopsy photos of John O'Keefe, and I saw his arm, and I said, are you kidding me? He was hit by a car.
And I actually remember Alan calling me into his office and saying, Liza, you gotta read this, you'll like this case.
Like, Alan Jackson also prosecuted Phil Spector, so he's prosecuted cases and he's defended. I'm torn. Kevin Spacey sucks, but Phil Spector also sucks and he prosecuted Phil Spector, so whatever.
Right.
Back to John's death. Karen says, remember at the top of this episode, she's like, this is my testimony because I remember everything that happened perfectly clearly. My memory is 100%. Karen, right now, says, I was confused. There was no memory.
Confused and bewildered.
Confused, bewildered, betrayed, bewildered, birdcage. There was no memory of anything happening.
Yeah. She said, I've been drinking. It was late. I never heard from him again. But then she says to the camera, so I'm thinking, could I have run him over? Did he try to get me as I was leaving and I didn't know it? She's always got the music on really loud. It's snowing. The
wipers
on,
are going.
The wipers. Like, did he hit the back of my car and I was drunk and he was drunk and passed out? And she says, when she asked her attorney, David, about that, he's like, girl, if that's what happened, then you are partially responsible for this. And that all sounds so reasonable to me. Like, I'm not saying that's what happened, but there is, like, I can see a case where that's what happened.
Sure.
She accepts some sort of responsibility. It was an absolute accident. Like, I do not think that Karen Reed tried to kill John.
No.
I'm not saying she didn't kill John, but if she did, it was not on purpose.
I agree.
You know?
I don't think it was like, I'll get you, or
right.
Like, I don't think
I'm
it was like,
I'm gonna back into you, and no, absolutely not.
And especially, like, you could talk shit about those voicemails, but the voicemails aren't of someone
who thinks that she just killed somebody.
And even, because if she hit him, she doesn't remember.
Exactly.
I don't think she knows how she got to his house by herself.
No question. I think that she's like, her memories are coming to her in the moment.
She's leaving these messages as if she woke up and he was gone.
Yes.
And off fucking somebody else.
Right,
like,
right.
Yes. She doesn't, I don't think she fully remembers how she got home.
But I, yeah. And it,
maybe.
It seems like everybody involved, like all of the attorneys and the judges, think that she knows what happened and they gotta get it out of her.
Well, that's crazy.
Where I'm like, she doesn't know.
That's crazy. Yeah. Everyone was too drunk.
Yeah.
So at John's funeral, hundreds of police officers are there.
It's kind of a beautiful thing to see.
50 bagpipes. Well, 50 too many.
It's very Boston.
It's very Boston.
Yeah.
50.
I mean, it's one is too many. No offense.
It's a hard instrument to listen to.
There's a reason you've never heard like the lullaby on the bagpipe.
Like,
you know what I mean?
When I was bartending at this now defunct old Irish dive, which was so much fucking fun, but at times.
Yeah.
But
the good old days.
A little revisionist history on my part. Well, it was my iPod, which was always fun.
Oh,
like, I got to run
great.
The iPod. It was fun. That's where Mickey Dolenz came in. Anyway, stories for days.
Thinking.
But one St. Patrick's Day, because I always had to work St. Patrick's Day, it was hell on earth when it fell on a Saturday or a Friday,
oh,
by the way.
Oh, God.
But there would be like bagpipers that would come in, and it was a small, crowded bar. And it's like when it feels like it's inside of you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's a real hard instrument. That's true.
It's a loud instrument.
It very much
But they're doing it to pay their respects to John O'Keefe, which he's very much getting lost in this story.
And we learned, too, that Karen, after being arraigned, she said there was a stay away order from John's family, so she couldn't go to any of the funerals or the public memorials for him. And she says she's never been to his grave.
She's never been to his grave. She says, I just want all of this behind me.
Yeah.
And I just think, again, I don't think she's the best communicator, because if she just also would have said, because it makes you go, you've never paid your respects once?
I know. Like, you wouldn't go at 3 a.m. Like, that's when I would go.
And then, again, I'm not saying this makes her a murderer.
Right.
I'm just saying, like, it's, you know, she's going to say, I did love him, or she loved his kids so much. And it's like, no matter what your relationship was, I know you were at the tail end of it. I know you guys were breaking up soon.
That's what I was just going to say. We've covered this before. Like, when two people are at the end of a shitty relationship and one of them gets murdered, I give the other partner a little bit of room for not, like, crying and grieving. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Like, they kind of hated each other.
Yeah. And at the same time, it's still like, I think people, I'm not saying I feel this way, but I think some people are like, could you just say it's a tragedy?
I want that. I need a little bit of that.
Could you just say what happened was awful?
It's horrible. And the world lost a man who was raising his sister's kids.
Right.
You know?
Didn't work out, but.
Yeah, totally. Everybody else said it.
Right. You know,
So we learn after Karen was charged with manslaughter.
The prosecution took the case to a state grand jury and presented second degree murder. And that returned an indictment. The grand jury said, yeah, there is enough evidence here for this case to go to trial.
Involuntary manslaughter is an unintentional killing that's done as a result of acting recklessly, causing the death of another. Karen's charged with second degree murder, which is essentially murder with malice aforethought.
So I want to slow down on this. This charge means that she killed him with malice and forethought.
Yes.
So it wasn't an accident. Life in prison, no parole.
Yeah.
I am telling you as I sit here, we are only here in the circus because of the upcharge.
Yes.
I am sure of it.
Yes.
If they didn't upcharge her, they would have gotten her on the plea and she would have done probation,
a couple
community
of
service,
or whatever.
Whatever.
Yes. Yeah.
I think she would have been pled out to community service,
which,
or something.
In my opinion, would have been appropriate. Like, this was a terrible, terrible accident. They should all be in prison for the rest of their lives for the drunk driving.
The endless drinking and driving.
Yes. And you know what? I hope that they would have gotten her on that she ran into him by accident because she was drunk. I hope that they would have, I hope that there would have been more charges added for that.
The upcharge is why we're here.
100%.
And will it end in us uncovering decades of corruption and a 40-person conspiracy? Maybe.
Maybe.
But we're only in this circus because of the upcharge.
Yes.
And if the corruption didn't want to be uncovered,
right,
they should have just left the original charge the way it was.
Listen, I think that we get some of that. I think there's a lot of buyer's remorse with this grand jury.
And
you know what I mean?
And doubling down in the second trial instead of saying, how many times have we, even with Little Miss Innocent?
Oh, yeah.
Now that she's out of prison, they're like, I don't know if we're going to retry her. It's like, it's a lot of money and resources.
Yes.
For what?
I know. And like, you could have kept all your secrets hidden, Boston
like,
police.
Like, could they, I don't know, I'm not an expert, I'm just asking a question. Like, could they say, we're not going to charge her with this, but we're going to charge her with this? Like, did the second trial have to be the same exact charge?
Yeah.
Or could they have just said, and of course, her and especially Alan Jackson would never just let this go away. They
right.
were going to fight to the death.
Yeah.
No pun intended, with what we have now. But I wonder if the Commonwealth could have been like, can we get you on the drunk driving thing? And then we can
and then
all
we'll
walk
all
away.
Move on. Right. Well, and also, but like, Karen Reed's famous now. She loves it. Vogue wants to talk to her. You know what I mean? Like, it's, I know, like Vanity Fair did a whole spread. Like, it's, she loves this.
We will get there.
Yeah.
So we get the body cam footage of Karen being arrested for a second time.
Arrested again.
For the upcharge.
Yeah.
I was cuffed by Proctor. I had on boxer shorts, no underpants, a tank top, and I had thrown a cardigan on it when I heard them out front, and I had on my slippers.
Take care of it. So what type of medication do you need?
I need
right now.
I need medication. I need some personal bathroom items. Can I have normal shoes, please, so I'm not on TV looking like this?
Yes.
What? Again, your parents can come over here and retrieve anything.
But I don't want to be on Channel 4 in my pajamas.
I wouldn't worry about the news right now.
Because she says, I don't want to be on Channel 4 in my pajamas.
Yeah.
Can I please change so I'm not on TV looking like this? And former Trooper Proctor, who we will get to, says, you see how crazy she is? She's more concerned about what she looks like. I want to say, especially as a woman, These photos and videos will live forever. You will be judged. This will be used against you in ways you can't even fathom.
Yeah. And she does talk about how vulnerable she feels wearing boxer shorts and no underwear.
And no underwear with a bunch of men. Absolutely. And God knows what's going to happen to her when she has her handcuffs on.
And she even says at one point, they say, let's do this around back. And she thinks they're going to physically hurt her.
Yeah. I understand why she doesn't want to be photographed as the crazy lady in the slippers.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of things that she does here that are meaningless to me.
Yeah.
That people are going to try to pin on her that she fucking did this.
Yep.
And this is one of those things where I understand what she's saying.
And you know, now that you're saying it, it's like maybe people don't think about it and they think that like whatever she's in, the perp walk, she got to choose that outfit.
Yeah.
Maybe people think she wanted to wear the slippers and the boxer shorts because she would think it would look sexy.
Or something. And guess what? They don't let her.
I know.
They arrest her and what she's wearing. And eventually you'll see someone brought jeans for her.
They say like her dad or whatever goes to the house and gets clothes
but
for
her.
But
she's still wearing the same cardigan and the same tank top. So like she doesn't get what she asks for.
Yeah.
So I understand why she asks for it.
So we're back with attorney David, her original attorney, and he's saying the day that Karen was arrested for the second time, he gets back to his home office and his paralegal called and said a guy named Mike called with important information.
Mike in quotes.
Mike in quotes.
Not his real name, Mike.
Not his real name, Mike.
But then he got a call at his office and this person said in almost whispered tones, you need to look at the folks inside 34 Fairview. You need to look really hard at the homeowners. You need to look really hard at the occupants of the house. Something here is more than meets the eye.
And again, like to me, if there's no any other non-cop.
Yeah.
The cops would have done that already. There's a body on the front lawn and no one
that's
inside.
That's been there for hours.
The house gets questioned?
Yeah, 100%.
Like, wouldn't that be the first thing you talk to the people in the house and they haven't yet?
Right,
the
yes.
The other cops haven't talked to the other cops with the dead body on the front lawn? It's weird.
Oh, God, now I'm becoming a conspiracy theorist because they've got a patsy in Karen Reed.
Yeah.
You know?
Even if they didn't beat the hell out of this guy and leave him on their own front lawn, whatever, there's stuff going on with all of the people in that house in some way, whether there was something going on either in the house or with the people in the house that they didn't want anybody knowing about, whether it has to do with John O'Keefe or not.
Yeah.
They don't want anyone looking at their phones. They don't want anyone looking at their friendships.
This is interesting that it's not necessarily that they killed him, but it is that they don't want an I hadn't even considered this.
Oh, sure.
That it's not that they killed him. It's that they don't want an investigation into their devices.
That was the first thing I thought of. Whether they are involved, I'm not saying they're not, I'm not saying they are.
Yeah.
It's very clear to me they don't want anybody sniffing around.
Uh-huh.
But the thing that they fucked up on is the upcharge.
Right.
Because
right,
now everyone's sniffing around twice.
Yes.
For a second time, for a second trial. So we don't know who this Mike is. We don't know his connection to the case. He claims he wasn't there.
Right.
He happens to know a lot of things that went on in the house for someone who wasn't there.
Well, and so this leads us in an interesting direction. So the defense team is saying you need data to prove a conspiracy. If it was a conspiracy to kill John and have Karen take the fall, you need to see people's devices, right? That's what we're talking about.
Because the people in the house were Brian Albert, a Boston police sergeant, head of the fugitive unit, Brian Higgins, an ATF agent, and Bessie's with the chief of police. So Liza Little, Karen's lawyer, is like, we need to get the phone information. That's how we won the Spacey case. I'm like, Liza, please, not now. Liza, girl, please. I forgot about the Spacey of it all. Can we not bring him in here?
But she says, this was interesting. The prosecution did an extraction of Jen McCabe's phone. Why would they do that? Because, like, she's a witness for the prosecution. Why would they have done an extraction of Jen McCabe's phone?
I don't know, but they didn't.
It's very weird. So the defense—
And no one else's, is what you're saying.
Just in general, why would they go fishing for information in Jen's phone if it could potentially show things they don't want shown? It feels weird.
So now you're saying the prosecution's in on the conspiracy.
Well, I'm just saying, even if it's like, well, why, we don't want to give them anything that could be twisted to make it look, you know what I mean? It feels like something the defense would do. Like, we want to see inside the devices. But for whatever reason, the prosecution did this. The defense gets access to this extraction. They give it to some fucking forensic computer guy and he's going through it. And out of the blue, the computer guy calls up Alan, the attorney. He's like,
I just wanted to tell you, I don't know if this means anything to you, but in Jennifer McCabe's phone, there's a Google search for how long to die in the cold. She misspelled the word how, spelled it H-O-S. And I said, are you sure? Because that wasn't in their report. He said, yeah, I'm sure. And he said, is it 2:27 and 40 seconds? Okay. What date? They said January 29th.
Jen, from inside the house, is Googling on her phone how long to die in cold. Well, there is a man on the front lawn dying in the cold.
3 hours. She's Googling this, allegedly, supposedly, 3 hours before John's body was discovered. This was not in the report that the defense was given.
Right. So this information was there, but the prosecution didn't report it.
We will spend an obscene amount of time on how long to die in cold. If you are new to the Karen Reed case and the death of John O'Keefe, welcome.
Welcome.
A lot of people think it all hinges on how long to die in cold.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how much it matters.
Yeah.
We'll dive into...
I've got really strong opinions on this.
We'll dive into when this Google search was done.
Yes.
If it happened at 2:27, we'll get into it. But we are here in Canton, Massachusetts for the next several weeks.
Oh my God.
I'll see everyone at Side by and Grill.
God, girl. Episode one of A Body in the Snow, the trial of Karen Reed.
Yeah, and I'm not just saying this because it's currently 110 degrees in New York City right now.
Yeah.
Put down whatever you're drinking. Have water instead.
I know. It's wild.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's ease up on the drinking and the driving. Let's do none of that, actually.
Never do it again.
Now, I want to say, fam, all 5 episodes of our coverage are available right now in ad-free over on the Patreon. It's where you can get over 400 full ad-free bonus apps to download and binge the second you sign up.
There you go.
Patreon.com/truecrimeobsessed, or you can just go to the show notes of this episode. But get in there. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know your theories. I'm dying to know everyone's opinion.
And everyone does with this case. This is one of those cases, very polarizing, very divisive. Everyone's got a thought and a feeling.
When I was in Boston, I polled the audience, and I said this on one of our episodes, like the majority of the audience believe that John was murdered in the house and put out on the front lawn.
Or in the garage. We'll get there. We'll get there when Netflix comes out, I guess.
All right, fam. We love you. Thank you for checking this out.
Go have a great day.
Drink your water.
Yes, please drink your water. Be safe out there, please.
Yeah. You're
drinking and driving. Thanks.
Okay, bye.
I can't believe we have to say that still.
I know.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.